Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Let's do it.
Every Thursday morning, after a long night of Wednesday playoff action, just waiting for you in your podcast feeds as you wake up, it's Point of Contention.
On the Athletic NBA Show as a part of the Athletic
Podcast Network, it's myself, Zach Harper, teeing up the toughest topics and questions to Marcus Thompson, Jade Hoy producing.
Every Thursday, subscribe to the Athletic NBA Show.
Point of Contention.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to give you some of the craziest and most hard-hitting theories and takes of playoff action possible.
And you'll get Point of Contention right in your eardrums. In fact, if you don't like it, we'll have a Point of Contention for you.
Right here on The Athletic.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show.
On the Athletic Podcast Network.
And it is another Hoops Adjacent episode of the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldridge, I'm in Richmond, Virginia, if you guys can believe that, this week, because the Washington football team is starting training camp on Wednesday. We're taping on Tuesday. There is a big old thundercloud right over us, so I may get end of earth thunder and lightning here in the next half hour, but we're going to push through with my man, Marcus Thompson, in the Bay. What's up, sir?
Why, you're in Richmond, Virginia?
I am.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. I am... not in Richmond, Virginia. I'm near Richmond, California, though.
There you go. So I feel the synergy.
I have been to Richmond, Virginia, though, DA.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you have. What was it? What was it for? For business or for a family?
No,
or
we
what?
Did a... when I went through the Sports Journalism Institute, our year, APSC was in Richmond, Virginia.
Got you.
So I learned all about the slip and the slope.
There you go.
My first experience with the Bojangles.
There you go. See?
You know what I'm saying?
There you go. I'm always partial to stopping on Arthur Ashe Boulevard and just kind of like, I don't know, just being obnoxious about it. Because it took so long for them to rename it after Arthur Ashe, who was only one of the most consequential
people. You're driving 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you.
taking selfies in the car.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, Lord. It's ridiculous. All right, so let's get our guest in because he's
going to Wait, hold on. We got to clear something up.
What's up?
You're at a football practice, a draft season? Like, what are you, some kind of like well-rounded reporter?
I do it all, Brohim. I do it all. I'm multidimensional. I got to be here. And by the way, Ron Rivera went off to the Washington. That's unfair. He was not happy with the number of players that have not gotten vaccinated yet on his team, because they got one of the lowest rates in the league. And you know, he's a cancer survivor, so dude is like, come on, y'all, what? What are y'all doing? You know, like, he's like, I had to deal with cancer last year, and y'all are tripping off of something like this, you know. So especially with this team kind of set up to maybe be a contender this year, man, he was not happy. But you know, just goes to show you, people got to be.
I'm just gonna keep my mouth closed during this portion. I'm just not gonna say nothing.
Uh-oh, silence from Marcus. I don't know. Marcus is a little silent.
I'm not wading into these waters.
Because we asked him to come and talk about the NBA draft, which is coming up on Thursday, which is more important to Hoops Adjacent, is our friend Sam Vecini. Sam.
With the pick in the 2000
the guru
NBA draft.
Of NBA draftdom.
Select.
The James Brown of The Athletic.
You know what I'm saying? Don't want me. Seriously, how many podcasts have you done already we're 3 days into the week? It's got to be like 30, right?
Yeah. It's been, you know, quite a few. I'm probably into double digits at this point. But, you know, I'm more than happy to make the time for you guys. I'm on with, you know, two of the people that I consider to be the absolute best people in this business. I oh, could man. Not
I appreciate
be
it.
Any more honored right. to come. Right.
The first thing we got to do, Sam, is plug the draft guide, which is just unbelievable. It's phenomenal. It's just the work that you did to get this.
Nah, I got a bone to pick with this draft guide.
No,
I got
no. Well, first, there's no bone, but we got to come up with a nickname because Brugler's NFL guide is called
the Beast.
So yeah. We got to come up with a nickname for your draft guide, man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we got to come up with something like the crossover or something like that. What do you think?
I'm getting tired of y'all, especially you, Sam, trying to make me look bad because I don't do that much work. Like, this is crazy. Did it have to be 130-something pages? 99 wouldn't have done it? Well, I feel like you're trying to show us
I think last year's was, like, 99. Yeah, look, I just try to put out what I think is the best product on the market for this. And look, like the Ringer has lifted its game.
Yeah.
You know,
but this is
Draft Express and those guys are still out there. I feel like I need to do something. I need to lift my game in order to accomplish my goal with this thing.
Dude, this is insane. I mean, seriously.
It's crazy.
This is insane. Like,
it's wild.
Here's what this has been my rule of thumb, and I do a little bit of draft stuff, nothing near compared to what Sam does every year. But I do this confidential thing where I ask people to give me their, you know, honest truth about who they like and who they don't like and why and all that sort of thing. And I always say, okay, I'm going to try to get 30 guards, 30 wings, and 30 centers because that's 90 players. That's enough, right? That's enough. These 90 guys aren't going to get drafted. 60 guys are going to get drafted. And then Sam does like, how many guys do you do? How many guys are in the
100
draft
in the draft guide plus five more that like pulled out of the draft, basically.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So how do you know when to stop? How do you know when you're at like 108, guy 108, and you just go, I don't think you make it this year.
It's got to be like near death, right? It's like when you decide your body can't do it anymore. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it kind of is at that point because the guys near the end tend to be the last ones that like just go on at the end, right? Yeah. Because of the international deadline, because of the college deadline. It just ends up being a deal where like, oh shit, like I got to get McKerr-Maker on here. Oh wait, now McKerr-Maker pulled out. I got to get, you know, who's 100? I think I forget even who 100 is. It's Lord. Like 7 a.m. here.
Has it like,
it's a, you know, Amar, what's his name?
Oh,
Amar,
the dude
Amar?
From,
oh, Amar Sia. Yeah, he's from, not very good, but he's super athletic. So, like, you know, it's, you know, you got to write something real quick on Amar Sia. When McKerr-Maker pulled out of the draft, the day before we were about to publish this thing,
yeah,
that was a bit of a panic.
He was 100. Marcella from Ustende. Yeah, that's right.
Here's the part that was crazy, and I really have to give you a hard time about this, Sam. Like, it's enough to mention them. Put some stats in there. So he's got a background, and then he's got strengths.
With parents' names.
And then he's got weaknesses. And then he's got a summary, as if the background strength and weaknesses wasn't enough. And guess where he finally pares it down to just background and summary? Number 80. Like, you could have stopped. I don't look. What's how you say it? What's the guy from the G League at night? Knicks? I think he was the last guy where you had the full thing from. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know if I needed to know all that from him.
You know,
I'm just like, yeah, Sam, like
my boy's got this. Like 10 is, though, candidates that, like, in here, and like 98% of people who follow the league have no idea what an Exhibit 10 is. They don't have any idea. You know,
oh, like I do legitimately have like NBA teams reach out to me and be like, hey, like, what do you think of this E10 guy? What do you think of Derek Alston? What do you think of Matt Mitchell?
That has got to be like the biggest, not ego thing, but just proud, man. Like they know what you're talking about.
I don't know karate, but I know karate.
Yeah, I I mean it. Anytime I get a call like that, it's all just incredibly kind. Like anytime someone reaches out, I'm just so grateful. At the end of the day,
yeah,
it's a lot of work. It's a labor of love for sure. And you know, it's just trying to figure out, you know, what people want. In the case of Dacian Nix, you know, Dacian Nix came in. He was the best point guard in high school basketball last year.
Sure.
And you know, I felt like he deserved an explanation why he was much 79. Lower on my board than where he is anywhere else. I feel like,
hey, that level of commitment and thoroughness and work ethic and detail will never be found on my end. So I'm glad you're doing it.
I'll tell you what though, too. Like I really do consider it like a thing that I need to give these players like enough time, right? I need to give them like a genuine evaluation. I need to make sure that like the first thing that's going out on them as they enter the NBA is something relatively detailed and fair to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, like this is going to be the first impression of these guys for a lot of people. So, you know, in terms of fairness to the players, like everything I do is kind of just out of respect and deference to the people who actually do this on the court.
Yeah.
So, it's important to me that at the end of the day, the things that are going out on them, they might disagree with it, but they can't come back at me and be like, what are you doing? Like, you're not putting in the work.
Now,
you know what I mean?
What do you do? I'm sure you hear from players. You hear from players' families. I'm sure you hear from players' agents when they're not ranked as high as they think they should be. And how do you, do you literally say, dude, I wrote 130 pages on the draft. I know what I'm talking about. Or do you hear people out and occasionally accept the fact that they may have a point?
Yeah, I'll always hear people out. Like a lot of it is not from the players. The players that tend to reach out to me more want constructive like feedback and criticism.
Right.
Like if you're reaching out to someone who does this, I feel like you're reaching out because you want to see where someone falls on you, right?
Yeah.
It's more like the runners and like the people connected with players. Honestly, like a lot of the agents, they don't really get too frustrated with me because at the end of the day, it's my ranking and they know that I put in the work. It's not like I'm just throwing something out there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's more like I got someone connected with a player that I've like ranked in the 70s and he was like, yeah, you know, my player, he's getting, real looks in the 40s and 50s. And I was like, yeah, you know, totally buy that. He's going to end up on a two-way contract. I think that's, you know, absolutely reasonable. And he's like, no, he's going to get a guarantee. We wouldn't have stayed in if he's not going to get a guaranteed deal. And I was like, look, man, here's the math on it. Two of the last 22 guys that have been picked 50 and later in the last two drafts, which are like the applicable drafts since we've gone into a different paradigm here in terms of two-way contracts. Two of those 22 guys have gotten guaranteed deals. The math's against you. I'm rooting for the kid. I hope that you guys are right because at the end of the day, I want all of these kids to succeed. But, you know, the math's against you and, you know, hope we'll see where it goes. Right.
Yeah.
And if he's right, what does it matter if where he is on your list?
Exactly. Totally. It's exactly right. Like if the Pelicans like his guy enough to give him a guaranteed contract, my man's making $900,000 next year. Why the fuck does he care where I have him ranked? Like
Exactly. So I know I'm old enough to understand that when you get within, say, 96 hours of the draft, the stuff that just comes out of nowhere or the stuff that is sudden, you know, this breaking news about what a team likes or doesn't like, or they like this person or that person, almost always is complete and utter bullshit. So I just want to say that right at the top.
Well, DA, this is an interesting question for you as someone who, you know, you're in Richmond right now covering the NFL.
Yeah.
I've always felt like the NBA is not nearly as bad with the smokescreen stuff as the NFL like seems to be. Look, I don't cover the NFL. I don't necessarily know, but I just know people who cover the NFL draft and they say it's like just insane, right? I've never felt like it's bananas with the NBA. Like I've never felt like people are willfully misleading me up until like this 72-hour period, right? Like, do you feel that way, that the NBA is much different in regard to this process?
I'm not going to pretend like I cover the NFL draft. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm not. Mm-hmm.
I do. It's nuts.
Yeah, I'm sure it's. I'm sure it's crazy just because there's more guys, right? There's more guys,
right?
In the pool. Yes. But I do think that there. Well, look, I'm not a big agent guy. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that there are some people that traffic in that, and it's okay. Good for them. It's a living. I'm just not a guy that's going to blithely accept someone's version of the truth because it makes them look better. It makes their client look better. And so when you get around this time and agents are telling, well, my guy, you know, he's going to be in the top 15, and you go, no, he's not. You know what I mean? Like, and you just have to say that. But then you know, all of a sudden you get these, I'll say this, like the sudden, so-and-so had a great workout for whoever. Doesn't matter what the team is. Doesn't matter who the player is. And now they're being seriously be considered for number one or number four or number eight or number whatever. And you just go, well, wait a minute. You have, even in the COVID era, you have mountains of evidence and tape and intel that you've done and background checks. And you've talked to players' moms and you've talked to their best friends and you've talked to the trainer on their high school team, and you know everybody, all the ball boys on every team they've ever played on, and you know their pastor and their counselors. You tell me one workout's going to change you know what I mean? Like, so it's just like this is crap. Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I cannot wrap my head around the like pro day industry that seems to have like taken hold in the last couple of years. I don't get it. And frankly, like, I talk to NBA executives and look, there are some, especially this year, for instance, there are some that did really want to see players come in person, see what their shooting form looks like up close, you know, see what their athleticism looks like up close. I get all that. Like, I think that this year particularly, there's a relative case for it, but man, like, there are some executives I talk to that just like laugh this shit off. Yeah. Like, they're like, they don't find any use in it. They do it because it's part of the process now and because they want to have dinner with the guy, right? Like, they want to have him come in. They want to learn more about him. They want to maybe get their own measurements on him and just kind of see where he falls at the end of the day. And yeah, they'll work him out just because he's there and they'll see what it looks like. But like, when people come in for workouts, the stuff that matters is not he shot 75 out of 100 at the end of practice, like shooting drill.
Right.
It's, hey, like, we really enjoyed our time with this guy, having dinner with him. We think he'll fit in our locker room at the end of the day.
Right. Right.
So you mentioned like the rise and fall. This part of the draft I kind of like because you start getting true or false, you start getting a feel for where people are going, right? And it seems like Jonathan Kuminga is the name that started higher than where he is now, right? I don't know if I want to say fall. It's not like I don't think he's going 14, but it feels like he was the top five guy, and now, you know, he could go as high as or as low as seven. What happens in that situation? What does it take, from your experience, for a player to drop, right? I remember when Paul George fell in the draft, and I think Paul Pierce too. You hear the whispers and stuff, and obviously those were wrong, but what typically does it take for a player who was once three or four to end up 7 to 10?
So I think there are two big parts of it at the end of the day. The first one is, throughout the year, I've kind of been, you know, reporting, and I don't really expect like anyone to read the intros of the mock drafts, right?
Yeah.
Everyone just tries to go to the order. But teams have been like kind of behind throughout the year because it was a weird deal in regard to having to totally adjust your scouting process for COVID. Like, scouts are used to being out on the road, seeing a guy twice, you know, seeing him once during the regular season, once during conference tournament. You know, maybe if they love him, they'll see him a third time throughout the year. I think there was a bit of a different paradigm this year, and scouts got a little bit behind in their process. Yeah. And I don't mean to say that like negatively of scouts, that they weren't doing their job. I just think that it was a difficult circumstance for everyone involved in the draft process. So what I think ends up happening is that evaluators at the end of the college season really do the deep dive into tape, and they really do the deep dive into trying to understand the context of each player's situation to make them kind of just feel better about the way the whole thing is going, right? So I think that the first place where guys end up falling is guys catching up on tape and realizing, oh, Jonathan Kuminga, like half the time was not in a defensive stance, right? Like things that like you wouldn't necessarily pick up on the first viewing.
Right.
Oh, half the time, like he wasn't making any sort of real rotation defensively on the weak side.
Yeah.
And that starts to raise questions with Kuminga, particularly on the defensive end. The shooting percentage is like, that's a question, obviously. But
yeah,
you dig into the tape and it's like, okay, so this is a problem. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
DA,
are you there?
Yes. Yes.
Do you hear me? Go ahead,
Sam. DA, all right. Yep. You're back.
I'm here. I'm back. Yeah, so, no, I was just, and, you know, it's fascinating that you mentioned Kuminga because obviously part of his story is this is a guy that came over here at a very young age, and it's fascinating to see the difference of opinions about what that means about him. You know what I mean? Like, it's fascinating to see some people go, well, yeah, but you know, you gotta look, go into his background. It's not good. There's a lot of you know, inconsistency. Oh, you got me now?
DA.
You got me now?
Sorry. He'll finish it somewhere. DA?
Yes, you got me now?
Yeah, you got me now? Yeah, you went crazy robot on us.
No, I don't want to do that.
Oh,
so I'll just say...
Just wait till that signal settles down.
That's very Herbie Hancock.
I'll put a beat on it, don't worry.
Rocket?
Keep talking to me.
1, 2, 3, 4. It is fascinating to me that people's opinions
are so different
on a guy like Kuminga because he came over at a very young age.
So Sam, you were saying?
Okay, so yeah, we'll go on. The second thing can be background stuff, right? Like there are a couple of... guys in this year's draft, and like, look, I really don't like getting into the background stuff like in a public forum because that's just not something I enjoy doing. But there are a couple guys that I think teams just want to know more about. Maybe let's say they're doing the deep dive and they're trying to understand,
or they learned something already that scared them, right?
Right. Yeah. Like that stuff happens too for sure. So I do think there are a few guys this year where teams are trying to navigate the way that their comfort level with certain things off the court or certain, you know, ways that a person is going to interact with the locker room.
It just, I wonder about, you know, like when a guy like, you know, say Kuminga falls and without knowing the reason, you kind of don't know if it's a gift or a curse, right? Part of you as a GM would have to be like, and obviously they know more than what I know, right? But
right.
Part of you have to be like, yo, why is this dude available to me? What has happened? But then the other part is, this is the great part about the draft, is somebody might fall to you. And that, for me, seems like a weird space. I'm sure it's different. It's a different space when you know what the reasons are, right? When you know what people are saying in areas that I don't get access to. But if they fail to your team, say if you're Memphis and somehow you're sitting there looking at Kuminga at 10, it's like, yo, why is he here? What has happened? Or is it like, this is incredible. One of the top players in the draft has fallen. That always feels like a weird space to me on draft day.
Well, and it is especially a weird space because oftentimes the guys that fall don't go into like pre-draft meetings and workouts with the teams that they fall to, right? Like Memphis in this case, was smart. And I think their front office does a really good job pre-draft and in the draft process. You know, before they went up to number 10, they did a meeting or did a workout with James Bouknight. They did a meeting with or a workout with Jonathan Kuminga, right? According to John Givony, I've not necessarily talked to Memphis about this, but you know, they went and did their homework reportedly at least. So, you know, a lot of the time though, teams don't necessarily have that time and have that even ability to meet with these players because agents, rightly or wrongly, end up withholding them from certain points of the draft saying, look, you'd be wasting your time. We'd be wasting the time of my client. We're not going to have you go into the team that's picking number 10, number 11, number 12, because we just don't think it's worth it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So another thing that I really want to ask you about is Cade Cunningham. And you've been on Cade consistently harder than everybody, right? Like, I feel like I love Cade. I feel like I love Cade. I don't know if it's because of you or I love Cade and you give me the validation for loving Cade. But am I wrong? And it seems like there's at least a segment that's not viewing him as a, to put it the way you put it, a tier one player where maybe he's closer to the rest of the pack. You know, it feels like that's what's happening. We read about the Pistons considering, you know, Jalen Green or Evan Mobley. And there was a time where, like last year, it was like tank for Cade, right? Everybody, Cade is the guy. And now it feels like, I mean, he's good, but it seems like there's a segment that's saying maybe he's not as good as we thought. And as someone who's been on Cade hard for a while, where is this coming from and what is it?
So I think it comes from the Pistons thing, I think, is almost like an anomaly. It's just Troy Weaver being as thorough as he is and being a bit of a different thinker in regard to the draft process. Like, he is not necessarily like a groupthink GM, right? Not to say that I'm like a groupthink evaluator, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think that Troy Weaver is one of the more open-minded general managers in regard to going through his own process every single time and trying to determine what he thinks is best. We'll see if it ends up being Cade. Everything that I've been told is that it's still the most likely outcome, but you know, we'll see at the end of the day. The big segment that I think the Cade question marks are coming from are the analytics community. And the reason for that is that Cade Cunningham's passing and playmaking ability are not really included within the analytic breakdowns or like the stats-based breakdowns of his game, because at Oklahoma State, he was needed to be much more of a scorer. And then additionally at Oklahoma State, there was an issue of absolutely zero space for him to operate on the court. The best three-point shooter on his team last year, who took more than like 20 threes over the course of the entire season, made like 33%. And then, like, they had a couple guys out there that were just non-shooters, like Ice Likely and Caleb Boone are just, like, non-shooters. And then they had another guy out there shooting, like, 31, 29% from three. So every time Cade Cunningham drove to the paint, it was just teams were collapsing on him constantly to the point where he had no space to operate. And additionally, on top of that, the college basketball court, I think people don't really recognize how big the difference is in the geometry of the college basketball court in comparison to the NBA court. These big, like 6'8" ball handlers, even when they do have space, sometimes that space gets taken up just because they're bigger than these smaller guards. And these, you know, college referees love calling charges more than anything on planet Earth. So, like, what ends up happening is they have to be so careful and they have to, like, deal with guys digging into their handle and collapsing into the paint and doing X, Y, and Z. And the way that that affected Cade this year was he ended up turning the ball over, right? He turned the ball over, I think, like 3.8 times a game. But it was more of a usage question as opposed to like oh my God, he's, you know, he can't handle. He has a high handle. He has bad ball handling ability. No, it's the context of the situation. So I think that the people that have him a little bit lower are combining the fact that he isn't like a traditional elite level explosiveness athlete. Like Jalen Green is like, you know, a freak show athletically. Cade Cunningham's not that. On top of it, he turned the ball over quite a bit and didn't have like the crazy assist numbers because his teammates missed a bunch of shots. So I think that the stats-based, you know, analysts often end up losing a little bit of the context. And that's why I appreciate like someone like Kevin Pelton, who does this as much as he does, right? Or John Hollinger at our website. I just happened to read Pelton today, which is why I said Pelton. Like he's still, you know, they have Cade Cunningham, number one, number two, because they understand the context of the situation and try to navigate that as opposed to just like blindly going off of the numbers, yeah. Which is what I think some other, even people in NBA front offices do at the end of the day.
It is fascinating to me to watch people talk themselves out of 3 years of evaluating somebody or 1 year of evaluating somebody, you know,
yeah.
That you would find a reason not to take the guy that you know you're supposed to take. You know, like, and I know part of it is you want to play devil's advocate and you don't want to have, you know,
fear.
Groupthink. But on the other hand, you do have to trust your eyes at some point, right? I mean, you have to trust your eyes. That's right. That's where you're getting paid is to evaluate, to make a decision. This player right. can do this. So it is amazing to me, especially again, in the last 3 or 4 days before a draft, where you hear so much about, well, this is why so-and-so is falling or so-and-so is maybe dropping a little bit. If it's not a medical, now medical is a completely different thing. But
yep.
If it's basketball, why would you talk yourself out of what you just spent 18 months talking yourself into?
Right. In the case of someone like Troy Weaver, this is why I kind of called him a bit of an anomaly in terms of this. Because the entire time, like the night of the lottery, what I reported was, look, like throughout the year, I've heard Troy Weaver really likes Jalen Green, yeah. right? And the Detroit Pistons really like Jalen Green. I think that they're going to undertake a process. Everyone around them seems to think they're going to undertake a process. In the case of Troy Weaver, like, you know, he's gotten a lot of stuff right. Like, he played a pretty big role in the Oklahoma City sure, Thunder, sure. like drafting Russell Westbrook, right. from what I gather.
That's right. right. That's correct.
So,
and playing he's
played
guard.
A pretty big role.
And insisting that he right. was a point guard. Yes.
And insisting that he was a point guard. Like, he played an enormous role in having Isaiah Stewart, who made the all-rookie team this year, drastically higher than most teams did on their board last year.
Yeah.
So I in his case particularly, I think that he comes at it from such a different lens in a good way that he's always going to undertake a process. So I think that's why there's no certainty here in regard to what the Pistons are going to do yet. Yeah. I think it's exceedingly likely that they're going to take Cade Cunningham,
right.
but I really respect the process that Troy Weaver has undertaken because I know that he's just going about what he was always going to do in this process. He's not talking himself out of it, kind of like you're describing, D.A.
Yeah, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
So you wrote in your latest mock draft that Cleveland is, I mean, obviously you got 1 and 2, Cade and Jaylen. Those been kind of, I don't think you've changed those for a while now, right? And Mobley, you say there's no changes there at Cleveland at 3. And it looks like the draft, the first like interesting, where it gets you don't know, is Jaylen to Toronto.
Suggs.
Yeah, sorry, I forget this 98 Jaylen. Suggs to Toronto.
Marcus, I've been having so many problems with that, man.
Especially when it's like, yo, Jaylen Suggs, Jaylen Green, and they might want Jaylen Brown. And I'm like,
Jaylen
yo,
Johnson.
Like, this is too much, yep. Right? Yeah. So is what is the difference between whether Toronto takes Suggs, Barnes, Kuminga, what happens on the market, or they aren't necessarily sold on one of those players as the pick there? Is it a matter of they love Suggs, they'll take Suggs, or they're trying to make a move and how it all fits will determine what they end up getting, will determine if the pick is involved or even if they take one of these players?
Yeah, the impression that I've gotten to this point, and I will say, like, I do think Toronto is pretty good at keeping things close to the vest.
Yes.
Is that they may not quite think in the same way that I do that Jaylen Suggs is like a top four player in a similar tier with Jaylen Green and Evan Mobley, right? Now, that's not to say that they aren't going to take him at 4. That's not to say they don't love him as a prospect. The impression that I get is more they think he's a lot more similar to guys like Scotty Barnes and Jonathan Kuminga. Mm. Again, they might end up taking him at 4 and liking him more than those guys. But I can't really get a read on where they are right now. And part of the reason that I can't get a read on where they are right now is that I think they are like really involved in trade discussions.
Yes.
Like, I think that they wouldn't mind trying to move up. I think they wouldn't mind moving down. I know that there was a report about Ben Simmons, you know, with a trade construction that seemed honestly like not even really doable in terms of the CBA, but like regardless, right?
Right.
It seems like there might be some interest in Ben Simmons, at least according to the reporting. So I think that they right now are kind of the one that I can't figure out, and the way that they make their decision at 4 is going to really shape. I don't know that it's going to shape the rest of the draft, but it's going to shape the next few picks at the very least.
Right.
Which shapes the rest of the draft though. So it kind of does.
The reason that I'm like a little bit skeptical on that is, okay, so let's say that they move, like I've kind of gone through like a number of the like potential outcomes here. So let's say that they take Jaylen Suggs, you know, Scotty Barnes probably still goes five.
Right.
James Bouknight or Jonathan Kuminga goes six, and then the Warriors are up, and the Warriors are the ones that really shape the draft, right? Let's say they take Scotty Barnes. I think Orlando probably takes Jalen Suggs, and then we're kind of just back to where we started, right? So the only way would be like if they made some crazy trade, right? Yeah. Or if they take Kuminga, which, like, I mean, if they take Kuminga, I don't really know. But, you know, Masai is very smart, and I've just learned not to doubt Masai.
I agree.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I don't doubt Masai either.
So, Sam, as we get near the draft, I'm always fascinated by what you see as somebody who does this, you know, deeper and with more detail than anybody. Are there traits of successful draft picks? And I'm not necessarily talking about skill set. I mean, if a guy can shoot, obviously he's going to make it. If a guy can handle, obviously he's got a good chance of making it. If he's a great defensive player. But are there traits, personality traits or individual qualities of a person that lead them to be successful in drafts?
Are you talking from an executive level or a player
level? No, a player level. A player level. As you evaluate these players, you go, these people all had these same characteristics. And it's not a surprise that they are either drafted higher or that they are succeeding when a lot of people thought maybe they wouldn't.
Yeah, I would say the big one is emotional maturity. Mm-hmm. Guys that are like emotionally mature, comfortable in their own skin, understand their role. I think those guys, not to say that they're all successful, but I think that those guys position themselves better for success early in their NBA career because they just aren't going to come in and like try and rock the boat. They aren't going to get upset. They aren't going to get frustrated. They aren't going to like, you know, have a meltdown if things don't go their way early on, because at the end of the day, being a rookie in the NBA is really fucking hard.
Yeah.
And these guys have to come in and they're going to have to leap over that rookie wall. They're going to have to overcome adversity in some regard. So I think emotional maturity is probably the thing that stands out to me the most. Another trait I would say in regard to hitting a ceiling, like the guys that, you know, go from being, you know, 15th on draft night, you're Donovan Mitchell's, your Giannis Antetokounmpo's, competitiveness. Mm-hmm. Like these dudes that are crazy competitors, I think give themselves a chance to really change the way that people think. Like you always hear, you know, Marcus, you're dealing with it right now, probably with Davion Mitchell in the Bay, right? Like, you know, people are like, Davion Mitchell's going to turn 23 before the draft. Like his ceiling is low. You talk to anyone that has been around Davion Mitchell, you don't get the impression that Davion Mitchell is going to plateau anytime soon, just because he's so competitive and because his work ethic is as crazy as it is. So
we might as well be a Chris Duarte ARP card at this point, right?
Like he's going to be 24. Oh my God.
It's like, yo, he's ready right now.
It gets held against him. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy that we're still talking about the draft in this way. But so let's get you out because you got to go, and I don't want to keep you. But let's get you out on this. Like, give me your, you know, one or two guys that you think will move up just because you have a feeling, spidey sense or whatever, and one or two guys that you're not going to be shocked if they slip a little.
I mean, Jalen Johnson's the one that I think is going to slip.
Yeah.
Look, part of this is like I've just never had a good grade on him. Like, I've never, coming into the year, I had him at like 19. There was never a point where I had him in the lottery this year.
Yeah.
There are questions regarding left IMG midseason last year, left Duke midseason this year. Teams are still trying to figure that out. Right. Teams are still trying to figure out, like, how does he interact with teammates?
Yep.
I think all of that stuff. So when those questions come up, I think that guys tend to drop on draft night.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, a guy that could rise up the board. I mean, I feel like we're at the point now where Moses Moody is pretty solidly in the lottery.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like we're at the point where James Bouknight has like already risen up. You know, if there's a guy that I think a team could trade up for and try to like jump some of these teams at the end of the first round, it wouldn't surprise me if that name was Josh Primo out of Alabama.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is I just continue to get really high level reports about what he looked like in workouts. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, you always take those with a grain of salt. Right.
Right. That's right.
But I think that teams were interested to see what he looks like outside of the role that he played at Alabama this year, where he was essentially just like a floor spacer.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, teams have been impressed with what they saw. So do I understand a world where a team is going to take Josh Primo over Cam Thomas, who finished fourth in the country in scoring at, you know, 18 years old?
Yeah.
Personally, I don't. As many questions as I personally have about Cam Thomas,
mm-hmm.
I can't figure that one out entirely. But, you know, if teams really want Josh Primo, so be it. Like, if he ended up in the late teens, I don't think I'd be surprised by that at this point.
Wait, I got one more. You mind if I get one more
go,
in here?
Go,
please. Right, I've got 10 minutes. You guys have all the time in the world.
So I love how you essentially break up the draft guide, right? And like tier one, Cade, superstar. Tier two is the all-star upside, right? Which is Jalen, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs, Evan Mobley, Jalen Green. Which of the tier three guys
do you think is most likely?
No, which of the tier three guys do you think could end up being, like, when we look at this thing in 3 years, in that tier two category, right? Like, yeah. Okay, they could have belonged with Jalen and, you know, in that level, like. Because tier three, it's starters, right? High leverage starters
yeah.
In tier three. Who from tier three has that all star potential you kind of assign for tier two?
Yeah, and I'll include tier four in this because, like, tier three for me, like, is only like Kuminga and Barnes, right? Like, I'll include tier four here because I think that it's just worth getting like a wider swath of names. In terms of just like crazy upside, I'll be honest, like, if I would have filed this, you know, a week later, you know, just trying to think about the way that I think Alperen Şengün's game has a chance to like really work.
Yeah.
It's hard to win MVP of the Turkish league, man, as a teenager.
Yeah.
Like, the dudes in that league are real. Like, I think like James Blackman, like McDonald's All-American, was in that league. I think like Kyle Wilcher was in that league.
No, it's
year.
A legit. You know, really good league. Yes. Yes.
It's like a great league.
Yeah.
And to win MVP of that as a teenager is crazy to me. People get this impression that he is like this white stiff kid who looks like Enes Kanter. Right?
Still doing that?
Crazy.
Yeah, but like that's just like not who he is as a player.
Yeah.
Like, he can drive, he can attack. Like he did like a 360 dunk in a game this year out in transition. Like not to say that like that's applicable to regular moments in a basketball game necessarily, but you know, he's not some, you know, some stiff athlete who can't do anything.
Yeah.
So I really think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be really, really good offensively. I'm not totally sure what you do with him on defense yet because he's just a little bit undersized for the center position, but I think he's going to be really, really good offensively. The other guy that I think just has a crazy high upside, if it all comes together, is Zaire Williams at Stanford.
Yes, that's who I was going to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, great positional size, great athleticism. You watch the way that he gets into his pull-up game. It's very impressive. He has the same kind of body mechanics and the same kind of like ability to change pace and get guys on their back foot and then step back that high-level NBA scorers have. The problem is that he has like zero contact balance right now.
Right.
And he's 175 pounds.
Right.
So he's going to have to like play in the G League for a year and continue to put on strength and continue to, deal with just like core, you know, I don't know the body mechanics of it, but like just deal with being able to take contact at the end of the day.
Right.
If he does that, I think that the upside is very high with Zaire Williams.
I was intrigued by the fact that he was number 15 in the draft guy, but you had him slotted at 18 because he's so tricky to figure out where he could go. But so the talent is there, just the question marks too. So he's intriguing to me. Most, you know, he's a Stanford guy, so I've seen him a lot.
It was interesting to talk to a couple of coaches about him that whose teams played against him, that they thought part of the reason why his numbers didn't pop was that it was just so much, I don't know, competition or you know, everybody wanted to be the guy on that team. They didn't want this kid to be the guy on that team, but he was better than everybody else. And so eventually they kind of gave in, but they feel like that may have impacted him a little bit. And that the upside, to your point, Sam, and Marcus as well, is just the upside is really intriguing on a kid like that, with a kid like that.
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head, DA. Like the deal at Stanford was a little bit weird this year. Plus, I mean, they were like out on the road for like 2 months the year.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Like they were not in, like if there was a single program that was most affected by the pandemic this year, it was probably Stanford.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Right.
So, and then if I remember correctly, like he had at least one death in the family. He might have two. Yeah, so it's just I feel like everything conspired against him a little bit this year in a way that, you know, I hope it doesn't going forward, because he's a very real potential high upside player. That, and here's the other thing too, like you talk to Stanford's coaches about him, they love him.
Yeah.
Like he ended up like leaving their program to, you know, deal with the deaths in the family a couple times. They would have every reason to be disappointed with how this season went for him.
Yeah.
And throughout the year, not just at the end of the year when they're like, you know, trying to cover their own ass in some cases with coaches that like maybe have players they don't love.
Yeah, right.
And they're trying to bullshit you. But throughout the year, like they were just like, man, like we really like Zaire. He's a real worker. He has like such a great mindset when he's in, like we think he's a great kid. You know, you'd hear that throughout the year. So I think he has everything that he needs to get there. It's just maybe the frame doesn't take weight in the way that we hope it does. Right.
No, I mean, Brandon Ingram is Brandon Ingram. That's his body type. You know, like he's not going to ever be 250 ever. You know what I mean? And it's okay, because he still is able to get around but he's strong enough to deal with contact. And I think that's where Zaire, you know, is going to have to live in the weight room for a couple of years, you know, but the potential is quite interesting, right? Quite intriguing. Sam, all the way across the world, man, thank you so much for joining us this week. Really appreciate it. I know you're in big demand. Look, y'all, I don't plug too many people, but if you don't understand how hard this brother works on this draft guide, it's unbelievable.
Yo, this is the greatest.
This is ridiculous.
Thing, man.
This is ridiculously good. I mean, I just can't. I'll never
this
work
like this
hard.
It's like an employee handbook you want to read. You know? You know what I'm
that's exactly right, Marcus. That's a perfect way to put it. actually want to read it. Subsection 17.
Guys, like, I mean, to hear this coming from you guys, I mean, like, just we'll put a smile on my face the rest of the day. Like, you two guys, like, I can't overestimate how high you guys are. I mean, God, DA, like, I mean, my, I will tell my dad that I was podcasting with David Aldridge today and he'll have a fucking meltdown. Nah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, you guys are legends in the business. So I'm always available to you.
Man, I appreciate it, Sam. Seriously.
I appreciate it. I just ain't doing this much work, DA. Exactly. I don't care it ain't happening, Sam.
Exactly. This is Sam's space. This is I'm out of you, bro. So look, man, get some rest. I'm sure you're starting on the 2022.
What? He still got two more days. Ain't no rest.
He probably already got 78 pages of the 2022 guide done already. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Sam's what it is. As soon as the last pick is made, he's like, all right, 2022. Like, let's go.
Guys, I have a 2022 mock file.
There it is.
I get asked for it. I don't even love doing it. Like, this next year is going to be a shit show beyond all shit shows. Man. So, like, you know, I don't even love doing it, but I have it filed and I'm excited for people to read it. We have free agency in 2 days after this. Yeah. Then I get to take a break.
It's crazy.
Then I'll take 2 weeks off and we'll be recharged.
Jumping again.
Well earned.
Man, thank you again. Thanks to all of you for listening. Please leave that 5-star review. You know where to leave it, on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you hear our fine, fine collection of NBA podcasts. And Marcus, if it's less than 5 stars, what do they need to do?
Man, keep it to yourself, sucker.
Haters.